This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Transformation Platform. I'm Adrian Groenewald. I've got a distinguished panel in front of me. Of course, it's one of at least three sessions on transformation in the healthcare industry. We had a bit of an introduction conversation last week, and it was with Dr. Shanil Naidu, Medical Director, South Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa, Boehringer Ingelheim, and Judy Vondel, Senior Manager at Deloitte. And they're here again. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's go to part two. We do have another guest in the studio, and there's a reason for that. It is Heart Month, isn't it? It's Heart Month. What does that mean in essence, what does that mean, Shanil, Heart Month?
Well, it's a focus on issues surrounding cardiac health and ways in which we can attenuate all the risks associated with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And next month is?
Next one, stroke.
Stroke, and then
November comes diabetes.
All right, but heart is, I don't know, maybe the most important. It's just my heart, you know. I guess they all are important. But I think the reason we're going to look at this, if we are going to transform the healthcare industry, which we had a bit of a discussion about last week, we have to change the mindset of ordinary citizens. And we have to take ownership of our own health. I mean, we realized last week leadership is at the core of this. No hospital or part of this whole ecosystem of healthcare in our country will ever have enough resources. So leadership is very important. And, of course, I think most important is we must get every citizen to lead their own life. I must lead my own finances, lead my own business, lead my own family, lead my own health. But I'm not so sure that we always do that. So that's kind of, and that's why the emphasis a little bit on the heart, and we'll bring it back again. To help us with this, Dr. John Benjamin, he's a cardiologist. I'm told there's not many of him in the country. I thought, just the word cardiologist, I thought, well, there will be a couple of hundred of them in the country. But apparently not necessarily. Dr. Benjamin, welcome.
Thank you for asking me.
It's good to have you with us. Let's get the mic a little bit closer there. How many cardiologists do we have? Is it? It's not such a common specialization, is it?
There are about 200 in the country.
Okay. And are they getting better or worse in our current environment where we're saying we have to transform the healthcare industry? The training of these men and women, what do you think?
Well, training is a problem generally in South Africa, as you know. Mm. The universities are not what they used to be. But there are still a lot of good people around in cardiology and in the healthcare business in general.
Because I remember sitting with a neurosurgeon. I had this numb feeling somewhere in my body, which just was persistent. And he did some tests, and I think we spent more time talking about how it's changing and how they're not training them the way they used to. And the kind of skills that they had, they don't have it anymore. And it concerned me, but that was on the brain. Today we're talking about the heart. All right, how good or bad are we? Let's just go general, and then we come to the heart. How good or bad are we as South Africans as far as taking ownership of our own health is concerned? So who wants to jump in? Judy, you have a view on that? I mean, maybe compared with other countries. I don't know if there are stats, but how good are we? Are we?
Well, I think there are a couple. I'll leave the doc to explain the terminology around hypertension. But hypertension or conditions relating to hypertension is the seventh biggest killer in South Africa. They say one in three adults is affected by hypertension, and 75% of us don't even know we have it.
Okay, you've jumped to hypertension now. There's the link with that and the heart.
Sorry. Okay, so hypertension, which is high blood pressure, in essence. So the higher your blood pressure, the harder your heart is working effectively. Yeah. So the harder the heart works, the more tired we get. We physically degenerate on it. But what we're looking at is, as I say, it's the seventh biggest killer. Kills more women than men.
Oh.
I think there are a couple of other reasons around causes of death in South Africa in terms of why and where that happens. But I think, you know, the rate of increase in this hypertension, we in Africa, it's increasing at 2 to 3 times faster than the rest of the world. Mm. Now, there are a couple of reasons for that. One, we're living longer, so more people develop hypertension. It tends to be something that develops in with age. We are getting better at diagnosing it. So we do understand that we need to go and have our blood pressure taken, etc. But also we've got a double whammy in terms of how quickly the bad habits, so the bad lifestyle habits, are affecting our population. And that's one of, you know, the three main reasons they say that this is increasing.
Okay, so if we had to look at hypertension compared to other countries, we would have good reason to say that we're not necessarily as good as we should be, or compared to other countries maybe, in terms of taking ownership of our own health.
I think from a statistics point of view, I mean, the cardiologist might have some more say. We are quite bad in terms of the percentage of hypertension. And that, yes, is linked to us taking accountability in terms of both our lifestyle choices that we make, but also taking on the onus to go and make sure that you don't have high blood pressure.
So just before we go to the doctor, Sunil, do you have a view on, in general, building on last week's conversation, how good we are as South Africans in taking care of our own health?
Well,
Do we want the state to do it? Is our mentality right?
Well, let me unpack it this way, right? So we have got a patient pool. In that patient pool, we have a large number of diabetics. So we've got about 30% of folks in South Africa that have diabetes or hypertension or a whole lot of lifestyle illnesses. But in that group, we have a large number of undiagnosed people. So you will have information cascaded from cardiologists or from medical doctors from the Department of Health that says, this is the definition of hypertension, but it's the individual that needs to go and get themselves diagnosed. And that's where the problem lies. It's the number of patients that are undiagnosed. So you have pockets of excellence, right?
Okay.
But if you look at the landscape, you have a very, very large percentage of undiagnosed patients. So that's where you have a lot of adverse events associated with hypertension. You have cardiac illness, you have strokes. But look at that undiagnosed population. Had they been diagnosed years earlier, they would have been on the right treatment. And then thereafter, we can refine it.
Okay. Dr. John Benjamin in the studio, cardiologist. Simple question. Are we taking care of our hearts?
Well, let me just start by clarifying some issues, just to emphasize what's already been said. Hypertension means high blood pressure. It's just the fancy medical name for high blood pressure. And high blood pressure is getting commoner throughout the world, in fact, but very common amongst Africans. The problem with high blood pressure, as has already been said, is it goes undiagnosed. Now, the question is, why does it go undiagnosed? I see a lot of patients with high blood pressure, and I tell them, you know, you've got high blood pressure. And the first thing they say to me is, you know, I had my blood pressure taken years ago. I haven't got high blood pressure. I was told I don't have high blood pressure. And they don't seem to understand, or the average person doesn't understand, that high blood pressure develops with age. As you get older, the incidence of high blood pressure increases quite markedly, especially over the age of 40 and 50. So I commonly meet people who say it's impossible. I can't have high blood pressure because I've had my blood pressure taken twice in the past and I was always told my blood pressure was normal. So that is where the public really must take ownership and realize that it is a disease that can develop in anyone. And the incidence is really increasing all the time.
And that goes to the heart. That's why we're heart attacks.
Well, high blood pressure causes a number of problems. It causes problems with the heart. It causes problems with the kidney. And it causes problems with the brain. And one of the most frightening problems, of course, is the problem with the brain it causes is a stroke. So undiagnosed high blood pressure can cause a stroke, which everybody is petrified of having. So without alarming everybody who's got high blood pressure, it's just terribly important to control the blood pressure. Now, it may be of interest to you to know that, for example, in a first world country like the United States of America, only 30% of patients who've been diagnosed with high blood pressure and are on treatment for high blood pressure are well controlled.
Only 30%?
30 to 40%. Okay. And it's worse in our country. Now, you've got to ask yourself, why are the patients who've got high blood pressure, and those are the patients I see, why are they so poorly controlled? Well, there are a number of good reasons for it. Firstly, there's a degree of negativity about and self-denial about it. A patient's been told you've got high blood pressure, especially if they're sort of youngish, and they've been told they've got high blood pressure, they need to take medication, they just tend to deny that and say, well, I don't really like the thought of that and I don't want to take pills, and they sort of forget about it.
Is it because they don't feel it? I mean, do you really feel it?
That is the other problem. It's called the benign killer. You just don't feel it. It's an undiagnosed killer.
Only when it's really bad.
It's called the silent killer. It's called the silent killer. So the patients don't feel it. Occasionally, the only signs or symptoms maybe are of headache and of nosebleeds. But those are in the minority. The majority of people just don't feel it.
They feel in control of the pressure in their lives. They feel, I'm fit. You know, I do jog a couple of times a week, so I must be fine.
They make the mistake you've just made, Adrian, is to say that they control of the pressure in their lives. The pressure in their lives has got nothing to do with high blood pressure, which is hypertension. Okay, so the pressure in your blood has got nothing to do with the pressure in your lives. Occasionally, if you have a very high pressure job, if you have high blood pressure, it will go a little bit higher.
Okay.
But the pressure in your lives doesn't mean that your pressure in your blood is high. So just to get back to why it's uncontrolled, is that there's a thing called white coat hypertension. Now, this is a big problem with the doctors have with high blood pressure. Patient comes into their rooms, and they take the blood pressure, and it's high. And it's important to know the numbers. The bottom line of the numbers, and perhaps everybody in the world should know this, is the top number shouldn't be above 140, and the bottom number shouldn't be above 85.
This is when the doctor puts this thing around your arm and blows it up, and yeah, it feels uncomfortable.
And the numbers, that sort of the red flags start above 140 and above 85. Now, there's a thing called white coat hypertension, where a patient gets a bit anxious, comes into the doctor's room, and his blood pressure will go up because he feels anxious. And the doctor doesn't know whether this is just white coat hypertension or whether the patient really has got high blood pressure. And that's a common problem that the doctors have. It's one of the reasons why blood pressure is so poorly controlled. The doctor doesn't know what to do. And the answer to that is the patient must then take ownership, this is what this is all about, of the problem. And in my view, patients who have suspected high blood pressure or hypertension should buy their own machine. It's called a Bowmanometer. And it's available at all pharmacies and other outlets. Price is about 500 Rand.
Not even super
and
expensive.
And the medical aids, if prescribed by a doctor, the medical aids will pay for it, or they should pay for it. So the patient must then go and buy his Bowmanometer if he's got suspected high blood pressure and take his measurements. And I always say to the patients, the best person to control your blood pressure is you, not the doctor. So you provide the doctor with the information and all the data and the numbers. So the patient may come back to me after a week and say, these are my readings, and give me a list of 20 readings that he's taken sometimes in the morning, sometimes in the afternoon, sometimes in the evening, because the blood pressure varies at different times of the day. And then I'm in a very, very strong position to prescribe medication and the right medication for the patient. So if a patient has his own blood pressure machine and brings the readings to the doctor can then control the blood pressure. Now, to get back, why are they poorly controlled? Well, the old teaching was that if one pill didn't control your blood pressure, then you just try another pill. And now that is absolutely incorrect. The teaching in blood pressure treatment, and this is what the patients must accept, is if one medication doesn't control you, the general rule, unless there's something wrong or you're reacting to that medication, is to add in another medication. So you're on drug A. If it's not controlling you, you take drug B. If drug A and B are not controlling you, you take drug A, B, and C. And that is the way, the best way to control blood pressure. The patients don't like to hear that. They don't like to say, but gee, I'm already on treatment for high blood pressure. Why must I take another pill? And this is one of the reasons why we got that terrible number of 30 to 40%. It's because the patients say, you know what? I've got high blood pressure. I was given a pill. That's the end. I don't need to see my doctor anymore. I'm on pill A. That's the end of the story. And the bottom line is, it's not enough. Most people with significant high blood pressure need more than one medication.
So something worries me. We can come back a little bit to what kind of lifestyle should I lead, and how much control do I really have over it? How much is hereditary, that sort of thing? My concern is part of the problem, again, coming back to last week's conversation and transformation in this healthcare sector, is I live in, northwest province somewhere, close to Mafeking or in some goodness knows where area where medical care is actually, the resources and the structures are not that available. Is this part of the problem we have? Those people can't get a little machine. Those people can't do certain things.
But the basic control of hypertension, as Dr. Benjamin pointed, doesn't need high-end medical services. You don't have to see a cardiologist in order to diagnose hypertension.
Is that the diagnosis easy enough? Is that the first order of, what did you call it, the nurse can...
Primary healthcare settings are nurse run. A nurse can diagnose hypertension. It's not a situation where you need to go to a tertiary hospital or go and see a cardiologist for a diagnosis. And thereafter, treatment can be started at a PHC or a primary healthcare level. And should the need arise thereafter, it can be escalated to other centers, up to tertiary centers. But the important... bless you.
Thank you.
But the important thing is, and the important thing to note, is that hypertension can be controlled in primary healthcare settings. And if you do it early enough, you avoid the risks and the complications that will need tertiary care. For example, dialysis. Mm. That's chronic kidney disease. A lot of patients who are on dialysis have hypertension that led them down that path. So the question was, if you were diagnosed and treated appropriately at an earlier stage, the probability of you requiring dialysis decreases. Treat properly at a PHC level, then you'll potentially avoid tertiary care.
Judy, you wanted to come in, yeah?
So I think this comes back. I think we did touch on it last week. One of the challenges that we have is because of the way our primary healthcare system is and our clinicians in the primary healthcare system are kind of trained to look more for communicable diseases than non-communicable diseases. So when you come in with certain symptoms, they're more likely to look for a TB, HIV, malaria type answer rather than look at the non-communicable diseases.
So the top three killers rather than number seven.
Yeah, the top three. I mean, so they tend to look for a reason for that symptom associated with those communicable diseases. And it's about training both us as individuals to start recognizing, you know, the symptoms of some of these, diabetes being a big one, because as soon as you've got diabetes, the likelihood of getting hypertension is quite big. And our primary healthcare system tends to do that. The minute you're being treated for the sugar, they'll automatically put you on a hypertensive drug. They won't necessarily test you to see if you do have hypertension. It's kind of a standard thing. So it's that training of the healthcare professional as well to look a little bit broader than the communicable diseases. And what that does mean, it's the point that you're just making, is people then aren't necessarily presenting at the primary healthcare facility. They're now presenting at the hospital. So they've kind of missed out on that real early intervention stage where it is less costly to treat those individuals than to try and treat them in a hospital. So okay. It's around that. It's the education and understanding at PHC level that I think we can do better on. And not just South Africa, it's an Africa-wide problem.
Now, one of the benefits for the slow people out there are that I'm slow. So I'm still also trying to make the golden link between, this is heart month, and we're talking hypertension. Is it because, and you said there's a strong link between hypertension and kidneys or hypertension and other things. Why are we so strong on hypertension when it's heart month?
Well, high blood pressure affects your heart, as was explained earlier. The higher the pressure, the harder the heart has to pump.
Mm.
Then the heart grows in size. If you have had high blood pressure for a number of years, the heart muscle gets thicker. And to have a thick heart muscle is not good, because a thick heart muscle needs more oxygen.
Mm.
So... high blood pressure, if you've had it for a long time, your heart gets thicker and you can develop heart failure due to high blood pressure. That's not uncommon in our country, to see untreated hypertension to go for some time and then for you to develop heart failure. But I would like to just mention to those people who might be listening who have high blood pressure that there are some simple basic things that are important, like salt restriction. Mm. Is important. You shouldn't really add salt to your food if you've got hypertension.
Is this now a lifestyle? Shall we talk about that? Bring that into what kind of lifestyle should I have to minimize? Unless, Chanel, you wanted to come in on the other conversation, then we go to lifestyle.
Well, look, you know what? Lifestyle is an important aspect of it. And I think perhaps now let's deep dive into lifestyle.
Okay.
The issue about salt intake. Salt intake is one of those things, certainly high salt intake is one of those things that leads to hypertension.
So I get my food and I'm automatically just pumps the salt on it, not good.
And the scary aspect of it is that, as Dr. Benjamin pointed out, it's a silent killer. So you won't feel hypertension initially. Now, to use one example, people feel low blood pressure. When their blood pressure is low, they could potentially feel dizzy, faint,
mm-hmm.
right? But when the blood pressure increases, they don't feel it. So it's not a trigger when your blood pressure increases to go and see a healthcare professional.
Mm.
You know, and a similar thing happens with diabetes. When your blood glucose drops, you feel it. You feel weak. You feel uncomfortable. You need to sit down. But when your blood glucose increases, you don't feel it. And these illnesses are silent killers.
Okay.
Yeah. So the lifestyle interventions that you put in place will be something that you won't necessarily feel or see. You tell yourself, you know what, let me use less salt. You won't see the benefits today. You won't see that. So people will always question, why should they adhere to these lifestyle benefits? Why should they? Because they don't see those benefits.
Okay, so Dr. John Benjamin, so let's go on. You said the salt thing.
Okay, so it's salt, weight reduction, which is always a problem.
So if I'm overweight.
It's so hard to lose weight.
Yeah.
But if you're very overweight and you've got high blood pressure, then you may not get your blood pressure back to normal if you lose weight, but you may need less medication.
So this is why, and I know it's a simple thing to say, but as you get older, it is much more difficult to bring your weight down. When you were younger, you seemed to just exercise and that went away. When you get older, it seems to be diet more than exercise. So then you do have a little bit more weight.
Diet is a factor, but diet always mentioned in inverted commas because it's a difficult thing to control.
Mm.
And the other thing that people forget is alcohol.
Okay.
If you have more than 3 or 4 drinks a day, well, you'll certainly aggravate high blood pressure. So alcohol, especially in excess, is a potent aggravator of high blood pressure.
Mm.
So if you're overweight and you drink a lot of alcohol and you have a lot of salt in your diet and your blood pressure is only marginally elevated, you may be able to cure yourself and not need medication if you change your lifestyle completely.
Mm.
But that is rare. Invariably, most patients who've got high blood pressure don't happen to change their lifestyle, don't change their lifestyle easily, and they usually are best controlled on medication. And the big problem worldwide is for the patient to accept that they need medication and they need to measure their blood pressure from time to time to make sure that it's well controlled and that they don't need more medication.
Okay. Exercise, is that just to bring the weight down, or exercise is always good?
Exercise is good, but it's not a great it's good, but it's not going to stop your blood pressure
not determining.
Going up if you've got established high blood pressure.
Okay. And genetically,
there's a strong genetic component in high blood pressure. If your parents have high blood pressure or your siblings have high blood pressure, there's a good chance that you may have high blood pressure and that you should certainly be tested.
And if every time I've gone to the doctor, they've looked at my blood pressure, even until recently, and said, it's very good, great. So I'm lucky, I guess. But I'm now 48, and I must still watch it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just go regularly, I guess, and make sure that they always do check your blood pressure. Is that good enough? Pump up your arm, say, oh, brilliant, it's fine, relax.
And some people have a difficult blood pressure to take.
Yeah.
I find sometimes I have to take the blood pressure 3 or 4 times to make sure it's accurate. Some people have, have an obese upper arm. May have to have a special cuff. If you are overweight and you've got a very thick upper arm, you really do need a special cuff, and you can't just take it with a normal blood pressure machine.
Mm. Okay.
We spoke about early on about once patients are on treatment, they're not necessarily controlled. So there's a few reasons behind that. So you have a group of patients who now are diagnosed with hypertension. Now, you start them on tablets, and about 60% of them, or at least up to 60% of them, depending on the area and the population, are not compliant to that medication that they've been prescribed.
Mm.
So that's a big one, right? And then thereafter, the second aspect is that you have medication that is poorly chosen by the healthcare professional, either the wrong dose or the wrong drug. And the other thing is you have a situation where patients also fear that their blood pressure is not controlled, but are hesitant to start another tablet or another group of drugs. So a patient has that fear. And there are options out there where you have 2 molecules in one, a combination tablet. And it's that patients have this fear of losing control and potentially appearing more sick to themselves.
Mm.
You know? So it's not only in the hands of the patient or the healthcare professional. It's a multi-pronged approach. But coming back to what we started with, the patient is still the leader in this chain.
Okay, but we're losing this battle at the moment. Am I right or wrong?
I wouldn't necessarily say losing. I think we're becoming more aware of it. But I do think that there's also a bit of a fear people don't want to go and have their blood pressure taken. It's one of the easiest things to do. Almost every single pharmacy has got a BP.
It doesn't compare with a prostate checkup or anything like that. It's a really simple thing, isn't it?
It's happily non-invasive.
Yeah.
But it is something that we really should know. We should know what our blood pressure is, what our blood glucose is, and also what our cholesterols are. Those are 3 basic measures that, as every single individual, we should know. And there's no excuse about not having access to that. Your average chemist can do all of these tests. You can have these tests done if you go to the doctor. You know, you can choose that. So there's a bit of an accountability, I think, upon ourselves. So we're losing it because we don't necessarily want to take accountability. But there are then things that we can do. We don't necessarily have to jump onto all the meds that the docs are talking about. In the first instance, if we find out about these things early, take on a few lifestyle changes and adjustments, you don't always have to go onto medication. The likelihood is at some point you probably will do if you get it younger, and yeah, they're better to speak on that behalf. But it's about that accountability, I think, you know, the self-leadership.
The point that Adrian made is so important in any medical situation, and that's a problem for non-compliance. Patients don't like taking pills. And it is so important, and that's why my little trick of getting them to buy their own bone manometer, their own blood pressure machine, and then they take ownership, and then they actually see what their blood pressure is, and then it improves the non-compliance problem, which is huge. They say 75% of people only will take, at best, will take medication that they're given. I mean, I'm sure there are people in this room who have been given an antibiotic who don't finish the course. Mm. And that happens in 75% of cases. So now you've got to get this person to take a pill every day.
Yeah.
So the non-compliance issue is added to.
To add, there are times where fear factor does make a difference. Now, in South Africa, we have a huge HIV epidemic. If you look at the patients who are on antiretrovirals, more than 90% of them are compliant, and these are patients in the state sector. More than 90% of them are compliant to their ARVs and have a viral load that is undetectable. So it's showing that's positive treatment, right? Mm. So sometimes you have a situation where the fear of the adverse events or the fear of the complications associated with an illness drives people to take their medication on time all the time. Whereas with hypertension, because it's non-communicable and generally silent, people are less likely to adhere to the treatment.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We're at the end of it. A minute left. If we want to transform a healthcare industry, we've got to take ownership ourselves. And it seems this one especially so. Maybe all of them are like that, but this one especially so. We seem to have the primary healthcare facilities. We have the ability, pharmacies, whatever. But it's a matter of knowing, being educated. I guess the awareness levels must go up and that sort of thing. But final comment on what I need to know or do to prevent this one. Dr. Benjamin, do we go back to no salt? Do we summarize that?
Well, you can't really prevent it if you're genetically predisposed to it.
Yeah, then you
can be as good as gold and exercise and have no salt and no, and the proper amounts of alcohol, not more than 2 drinks a day, and be nice and thin, and still get high blood pressure if you're genetically predisposed.
Then you must just have medication or...
Absolutely.
Okay. Any other final comment, Chanel and Judy?
Yeah, get yourself tested.
All the time. How often?
At least once a year.
Okay.
At least.
Judy?
I was going to say exactly that. Know your numbers. Know exactly what those numbers are for the three. So hypertension, your blood glucose, and your cholesterol.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Chanel Naidoo from Boehringer Ingelheim, Judy Vondel from Deloitte, and Dr. John Benjamin, a cardiologist. That's enough said. Thank you so much, folks, for coming in. It's not a lot of time, but hopefully we made a difference out there. And look forward to our third installment of healthcare, transforming the healthcare industry. Have a good week. Next up is our youth leadership platform in association with Student Brands, and we are looking at our disability, but we have some really special people we're going to talk to from Cape Town and locally. We have Natalie De Toy in the studio, just going to engage them on their lives and their views on whether or not South Africa is in shape when it comes to this. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.